live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, from University in Japan, research shows that drinking matcha tea can reduce anxiety. And we have about 12 other studies. Also today, a very important original in-depth investigative reporting article by Richard Gale and myself. We've just completed it an hour ago. It's all about a slow death by 5G wireless technology. And this is the most comprehensive in-depth article that I have yet seen written that shows you how corrupt the system is and what you need to know. And also for those Senate hearings that were held, those were a dog and pony show, and we'll explain why. So I hope that you will share this article with everyone that you know, including every member of Congress, including every state legislator, including local council people at your city council, because you're going to have to stop this or you're going to be negatively impacted. Everyone in this audience. Now, mind you, we have a worldwide audience. So everywhere in the world, you're going to be adversely affected. You're going to end up with all forms of cancers and mental conditions, fatigue, and all the while we are experiencing a pandemic of adverse health effects from 5G, it will all be denied by paid-for scientists shilling for the telecommunications industries. How did we get to this terrible place? We explain it. An original article, we've just posted it in the last 5 minutes on PRN.fm. Share it with everyone that you know. This is not a game. Also today, I've set time aside for a guest, Nick Bryant. Last evening, I watched a documentary. It was an English-made documentary, and it was about a Franklin scandal. It was about a group of pedophiles out in Omaha, Nebraska, who were using boys and from Boys Town, the famous Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney film Boys Town, and it had very horrifying information that was videoed that has never seen the light of day by the victims. And then those victims were persecuted because the FBI and top members of our Justice Department and the state top people didn't want these very powerful Republicans, they were all Republicans, involved. So they put one person in prison, and that was one of the male victims, or one of the female victims. And then we heard her statements after she'd been released from prison. They gave her a 15-year prison term for perjury. Never before in America has any citizen received 15 years for perjury, and yet she'd been sexually abused repeatedly by the most powerful Republicans in Washington, D.C., that even had a tour of the White House late at night. You know, we're going to talk about that in light of the new Jeffrey Epstein, and we're going to give you some insights on Jeffrey Epstein that you didn't know. See, we did a lot of investigation on this, but because Epstein was found guilty of only two charges of soliciting underage sex, how in the world did he manage to get out of having had sex with probably, I'm guesstimating based upon the math, of their testimony at the time, close to probably 1,000 young girls. How did that happen? Was it Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton? Was it Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine and the deep state? Was it the CIA and protecting their asset? Was it blackmail? You're going to hear a lot that you didn't know about. None of the other media have done their homework, so we have it. We begin, however, always with the latest on health and healing. And many different countries, according to Kumamoto University, have a tea culture. And the Japanese matcha, M-A-T-C-H-A, tea, is growing in popularity around the world. In Japan, matcha has a long history of being used for medicinal purposes. It's been suspected to have various beneficial effects to our health, but relatively little scientific evidence supporting that claim. Now, a group of Japanese researchers from Kumamoto University have shown that anxious behavior, or anxiety, in this laboratory experiment is reduced after consuming the matcha tea. It has a very strong calming effect, and it appears to work on certain dopamine D1 receptors and serotonin 5-HT1A receptors, both of which are closely related to anxious behavior. It's a finely ground powder of new leaves from shade-grown green tea bushes, and the tea is enjoyed around the world. In Japan, historical medical uses were including helping people relax, preventing overweight, and treating skin conditions. So, just one more tea and the scientific evidence that it works. Also, a new research out of University of Liverpool, published in Psychiatry Research Journal, finds that psychiatric diagnoses to be, quote, scientifically meaningless. Well, it's about time. I'm going to be using this in my long-filmed documentary, Manufacturing Madness, that I'm finishing after the current one that is almost done. All of our voiceovers are done, and all of the principal photography is done. We're just in final editing and getting it ready. There's going to be a sneak preview in 2 weeks, New York. This is, of all the documentaries I've done, this is without question the most powerful and the most visually stunning. When you see the cinematography in this, you're going to say, wow, that's like something we would expect from a Disney film. Anyhow, according to this research, psychiatric diagnoses are scientifically worthless as tools to identify discrete mental health disorders. Now, of course, there are people suffering from a wide range of emotional, behavioral, and clearly mental conditions. For example, how many people have children who have, let's say, slow learning, memory problems? They shouldn't have those. Those could be from the lower end of the spectrum of vaccine injuries. How many have genetic susceptibilities and then environmental exposures that trigger those genetic susceptibilities, and the genomes start to act in a way that's not predictable? So a person suddenly goes through bouts of crying and screaming and hair pulling. And generally, these are given all forms of different psychiatric diagnosis, like bipolar disorder. It's a meaningless disorder. Schizophrenia is non-existent. It's a meaningless disorder. And also, there was a Nazi who actually came up with all the research on schizophrenia. If you just follow what happened after World War II and how the psychiatrists who were euthanizing patients then went to work in the United States, one at Columbia University, who actually came up with the concept of schizophrenia. In simple way of discussing this, there is a Bible that all psychiatrists use, that the courts accept. It's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, number 5. It's a comic book. It has no truth in it. And they talk about depressive disorders and anxiety disorders and trauma-related disorders, all nonsense. People have problems for different reasons. So you can't suddenly take 100 people who have similar type of symptoms and say they all have the same underlying condition. That's nonsense. Each person has a unique predisposition or unique outcome from the consequences of having a reaction. For example, I remember once I was doing a health support group, which are actually clinical studies. They're non-medical clinical studies, but they have always been medically supervised. But no medicines, no diagnosis, no treating, but a person comes with a specific set of conditions. And then we see, based upon the changes in protocols, can we make a difference? And at the end of each one, we've made a huge difference. And we've published it in peer-reviewed literature and presented it to scientific conferences. Well, I did one on the food mood connection. And we had like a 92% success rate of changing people's depression and anxiety conditions, fatigue and muscle pain conditions, just by changing their diet. One person came. This was an interesting person. She had multiple sclerosis. Her father was a Nassau medical doctor. He was suffering from all forms of pain in his joints, and so bad that after 40 years of practicing medicine, he was going to retire. He was on meds. And it turns out when he was tested, and he was tested with just diluted drops, the kind of drop if you took a drop of water and put it on your tongue, that little amount, it could trigger a whole set of reactions. And to prove this, a camera was set up at one end of a corridor. He would sit in a chair. There'd be a big giant clock behind him that had a second hand on it. And there'd be a tray with, let's say, 20 vials of liquid. They only had numbers, no names. Now, no one knew what, it was a double-blind study, so nobody knew what number 1 or 20 represented. That would have to be decoded by a different scientist. So he'd stand up and take a few steps. He'd take a few steps, and how do you feel? Raise your arms. Lift one leg. Okay, sit back down. For about 16 times, it was fine, and then he took one drop of this one vial, and he couldn't stand up. He was wobbly. He couldn't raise one leg. He had lost his balance, and his whole body seemed to concave. They gave him a diluting amount, and about 20 minutes later, they did it again, and he didn't know which vial it was, and they didn't know, but a separate lab technician simply kept that vial, took a look underneath at the bottom, and there was a number, wrote down the number, and the same number came up. It was beef extract. So it was a liquid, not eating a piece of meat. I mean just the liquid from that piece of meat, and it caused these reactions. So once put on a diet that was a vegan diet, all of his arthritis and pain, joint stiffness went away. Fatigue went away. All medications off of. And his daughter had multiple sclerosis and couldn't walk and was going downhill. Turned out she was allergic to 9 things. Tested her, got her off the things she was allergic to, and her multiple sclerosis went into remission and she began to improve. And I remember at a high school, RFK High School, some of you were there, I'm sure, listening now were there. That's when I had an all-day conference on alternative cancer treatments around the world, where I brought the people who had the best proven documented success with terminal cancer, the United States, Dr. Joseph Issels, Dr. Al-Kaidi, Dr. Brzezinski, Burton, Livingston Wheeler, all around the United States and around the world. And I saw her in the audience, and she came over. She says, look at this. And she stood up. She didn't have to have a walker. She was able to walk. That's the power of food on your body. That same food can impact your mood the same way. You can go into screaming fits, tyrannical fits, depression, withdrawal emotionally. Someone's going to think you have a psychiatric problem. No, you got an allergic problem. So you see, that's what happens when we're using a monotheistic single approach to making a gross diagnosis for everyone manifesting similar symptoms as if there's one size fits all, and that's not the way life is. Here's the main findings of this research. Psychiatric diagnoses all use different decision-making rules. There's a huge amount of overlap in symptoms between diagnoses, and almost all diagnoses mask the role of trauma and adverse events. Diagnoses tell us little about the individual patient and what treatment they need. And the authors conclude that diagnostic labeling represents a, quote, disingenuous categorical system. Wow. And this is from Professor Kate Alsop at the University of Liverpool. So, quote, here's what she said. Although diagnostic labels create the illusion of an explanation that are scientifically meaningless and can create stigma and prejudice, I hope these findings will encourage mental health professionals to think beyond diagnosis and consider other explanations for mental distress, such as trauma, and other adverse life experiences. Good for you for writing and doing that report. But unfortunately, with the amount of money being made on getting everyone on psychiatric drugs, nothing's going to change. From Slovakia, from Komenistas University, pine bark. That's very important. That's pygnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L, pygnogenol, or pine bark extract, could help antidepressant-induced sexual dysfunction. One of the side effects of these psychiatric drugs, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Physiology International, the pygnogenol, a very powerful antioxidant, and they get it from pine bark, maritime pine bark, it can help lower the incidence of sexual dysfunction as a side effect of the antidepressant therapies. And for men and women, antidepressants really destroy so much of your libido and desire. Most of these SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting antidepressants, do that. And this was a randomized study. They did 50 milligrams of pycnogenol daily. I would have used 200 milligrams, but they still got positive results. So men, if you're depressed and you're on medication and you're also having erectile dysfunction and loss of libido, this will help. Women, this will also help you regain your libido as well. And finally, methyl, and I talk about methylated vitamin B12, can really help people with chronic fatigue syndrome, fatigue, and autism spectrum disorder. Now a new study from Zixing University in China shows that it can protect cells from amyloid-induced cytotoxicity. That's important. Why? Because we're talking about Alzheimer's. It's the most common age-associated dementia, and it's increasing worldwide exponentially. So to be able to help a person with this, methylated vitamin B12, that can make a difference. All right? Also from Taipei Medical University, research shows that blueberries can intercede in the negative effects of radiotherapy that can cause cancer, meaning that research confirms radiation therapy drives invasiveness within cancer, as well as the power of natural substances to strike to the heart of cancer malignancy. This study showed that blueberries contain certain polyphenols, and they function as a potential anti-cancer stem cell agent in suppressing traditional mediated enrichment of the hepatotomous stem cells. So just another way of helping people deal with one of the bad things in life. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. Come right back to our special in-depth original investigative report. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. This original in-depth investigative report has been vetted for accuracy, footnotes, sources, and legally vetted as well. And we do that because a lot of people will use our reports in court cases and in challenging state, federal, or local ordinances or laws. Because, in effect, we're doing the research, and we're doing scholarly research. Over 800 original articles, as an example. The title of this article, which I'm hoping that you will share with as many people as possible, and don't assume someone else is going to do it for you, please do it. It's entitled, A Slow Death by 5G wireless technology. During the past year, Senate hearings leading up to the rollout of 5G wireless technology have made it quite clear that the race to capture first prize in the Internet of Things has little to do with popular consumer demands for improved Internet access. That's the excuse. But it's not true. Being called the fourth industrial revolution, the hype is that 5G will provide Internet speeds up to 100 times faster than 4G. Yet aside from the idealized and perhaps hyperbolic benefits of faster Internet connections and downloads, 5G is best understood within the context of the U.S. competition race against China to establish global wireless dominance. The Obama administration's FCC, under the influence of telecommunication industry's insider Tom Wheeler, who served as the chair of the agency, launched the Spectrum Frontiers rules to mandate 5G rollout as a national priority. Therefore, rather than the fundamental incentive to improve the lives of citizens, more important is 5G's role to reinforce America's global economic expansionism and military hegemony. For past presidents, and Trump in particular, economic figures hold all-consuming importance. One estimate claims 5G will bring over $12 trillion into the global economy, about $3.5 trillion in the United States, while providing 22 million new jobs worldwide. Those are simply guesstimates. And while 5G surely holds the promise of a huge windfall for the economy, these benefits will eventually be neutralized by medical and environmental catastrophes of an unprecedented nature. For the Defense Department, 5G will further harness global military dominance and strengthen the United States' lead as the planet's policeman. For the Department of Homeland Security, other federal intelligence agencies, and local law enforcement, 5G assures more far-reaching surveillance and policing on the American public. International spying and interference in other people's internal affairs will also advance exponentially. All the while, the telecommunications industry wets its lips over the certain forecast of rising stock prices and enormous executive compensations. For the Trump administration, the 5G rollout is imperative. Last December, the White House released an announcement that said, quote, "It is imperative that America be first in fifth-generation wireless technologies. Wireless technologies capable of meeting the high-capacity, low-latency, and high-speed requirements that can unleash innovation broadly across diverse sections of the economy and the public sector." End quote. What we're really looking at is a competitive war the United States is waging with China, which has already installed 1.9 million wireless sites. As the United States continues to lag behind, it is equally imperative that 5G opponents keep careful watch on the predictable rise in diseases and mental health disorders in China. But China doesn't report these, nor does it care. So we're not going to get any accurate figures. 5G smart cities will provide the government with total surveillance of every citizen in every single inch of our society. This was announced by T-Mobile's Chief Technology Director Neville Ray at the 2018 Mobile Worlds Congress in Barcelona. Sprint Vice President Raul Mercadet remarked that city government officials will have the capacity to monitor, quote, security issues. What does that mean, security issues? It means monitoring their citizens. The new generation technology, therefore, will offer a boon to the private security industry. Writing for The New Yorker, investigative journalist Sue Halpern describes how the new era of electromagnetic connectivity will increase the risks and severity of cyber attacks. She said, ransomware, malware, cryptojacking, identity theft, and data breaches have become so common that more Americans are afraid of cybercrime than they are becoming a victim of violent crime. She writes, adding more devices to the online universe is destined to create more opportunities for disruption. 5G will not simply connect your alarm clock and television to your mobile unit. It is estimated that millions of new 5G base stations will be installed. 20,000 new satellites will be orbiting in space. And 200 billion objects with wireless antennas will be transmitting EMF, electromagnetic frequency waves, within the next 6 to 12 months. A few years later, it is expected to expand to 1 trillion electronic objects. 5G technology will be fully integrated into airplanes, automobiles, trains, subway systems. Well, just imagine being in a commercial flight 6 miles above the Earth and a major 5G disruption occurs. Lights out. 5G servers are already being utilized for spy operations. Halpern reports on the discovery of a company in China that is causing all forms of problems. It's called Huawei, and using wireless servers installed in the African Union's headquarters in Addis Ababa, and, quote, sending sensitive data back to China every evening. Israel, Russia, and the United States have already been accused on many occasions for conducting industrial and defense cyber espionage. On all accounts, the threats of cyber warfare will worsen after 5G is functioning fully on a global scale. In the meantime, Washington and our mainstream media proclaim 5G is perfectly safe and the next great stride for America's utopian progress. Yet it may very well be the Trojan horse that brings the United States into an electronic dark age. The overarching question being ignored by Congress concerns 5G's public safety and environmental implications. During a Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee hearing just this past February, Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, challenged representatives from the telecommunications industry about the technology's health risks. When queried on the industry's commitment to comply with the FDA's insistence to fund, quote, independent research on EMF's biological effects, Brad Gillen, an executive vice president for CTIA, that's the leading trade association representing the wireless communications industry, denied there were any industry-funded studies and zero research and money allowed on 5G's health risks that were active. None. In fact, we have a clip, and if time permits, I'll play you that clip. Nor was Stephen Barry, president of Competitive Carrier Association, aware of any ongoing research. Blumenthal also sent a formal request to Trump's FCC secretary requesting information about the scientific validation of 5G risks. The FCC simply ignored the request and failed to acknowledge his request. And besides the unbelievable arrogance displayed by the industry spokesperson, from our perspective, it is perhaps worse that Senator Blumenthal, a ranking committee member and highly respected in Congress, failed to present any of the scientific literature confirming 5G's health risks. He could also have subpoenaed the FCC for ignoring his request. He has unlimited scientific resources through the National Academy of Sciences, the National Institutes of Health, all the medical databases, the EPA and the FDA, yet didn't cite a single study nor invite an independent medical expert to testify at the same time what we already know about 5G and earlier generations' electromagnetic frequencies' adverse effects on the human body. Dr. Henry Lay, a DNA researcher at the University of Washington, could have been called to testify. Professor Lay, that's L-A-I, was quoted in the British Medical Journal as stating, quote, I can name 600 studies showing bio effects of microwaves off the top of my head, end quote. Earlier this year, a petition signed by 26,000 scientists and medical doctors warned the United Nations and the World Health Organization and the European Union and the Council of Europe and the governments of all nations that, quote, the deployment of 5G constitutes an experiment on humanity and the environment that is defined as a crime under international law. The Senate hearing was another typical dog and pony show that we have become accustomed to over the decades, with pro-industry shills declaring ignorance of the facts. Who knew cigarette smoking? Who knew asbestos? We had no idea that DDT. You mean that actually caused a problem? And then playing for a green light while repeating false promises that we're going to look into this, absolutely, as soon as we get back to the office. We promise you. In the meantime, Congress concedes to industry demands because revenues are being lost and shareholders are becoming impatient. We have heard this all before with the approval of asbestos, Monsanto's glyphosate, genetically modified crops, tobacco, and countless pharmaceutical drugs with questionable safety and efficacy records. Just a month ago, month and a half ago, the Senate's Judiciary Committee hearing on 5G was even more of a charade. Senators Lindsey Graham and Barbara Feinstein completely avoided the evidence supporting 5G's detrimental effects on humans and animals and insects and the environment's health. The 5G rollout was certainly in the mind of every committee member. Questioning of industry representatives focused solely on national security and cyber threats to the Internet of Things. Nor were the larger public consequences of safety from having all electronic systems controlled by artificial intelligence suddenly being disabled discussed. Clearly, national security and protecting the country's military and intelligence and elites was, well, that wasn't an issue, but helping the public was not. And since no modern military can realistically win a conventional war, then how likely will the next war between superpowers be waged except as cyber wars? This possibility seemed foremost in the minds of our senators. The FCC is a fully industry-captured agency. In 1996, the co-presidents of Bill and Hillary Clinton willingly handed over to the telecommunications industry carte blanche power over state and local governments and local citizens to install 5G technologies anywhere they wanted. Clinton's Telecommunication Act, the TCA Act, is a corrupt piece of legislation. It decrees that no health or environmental concern can interfere with telecom installations. In addition, the TCA gives full power to the FCC to regulate telecom's electromagnetic frequency health effects. That's odd. This ruling was a dangerous joke because the FCC is not a health agency, nor does it employ any medical or biomedical experts. The act also overrides the authority of your local town, community, city, and county and states to rule against 5G stations and cell tower installations. So as a hypothetical, let's just say that Portland, Oregon says, we don't want 5G. All right. Now you're going to be sued. And it'll go to the Supreme Court. And you'll lose. Everywhere you oppose it, you will lose. Unless Congress rescinds that law and makes a new law that gives the people the power. But that's not going to happen because so many people in Congress, led by the Clinton cabal, have captured those regulatory agencies. Obama was just an extension of Clinton in policymaking, and Trump is no better. Under President Obama, FCC Chair Tom Wheeler, in no uncertain terms, called for the private industry's technology to drive national policy rather than vice versa. In other words, telecommunications industrial complex has been handed precedence over elected legislators, including congressional leaders such as Senator Blumenthal, who voiced deep concern about 5G, human and environmental risks. And I support him for doing that, but I challenge him. You have a giant staff. You could have found this within 1 hour. You could have found 10,000 studies, and you could have brought those scientists who did those studies in. You didn't. Wheeler, Obama's FCC chair, was a principal architect behind the 5G strategy. So was Obama. And this has never been acknowledged, that there is an enormous body of medical research concluding electromagnetic frequencies are threats. By the way, he is a product of the same private industrial mindset that has churned out climate change deniers in the fossil fuel corporations and the GMO risk deniers in big agriculture. Obama's FCC also established a criterion whereby the technology antecedes the warnings voiced by medical, health, and environmental institutions and agencies. And under Trump and the chairmanship of Ajit Pai, the FCC's corruptions has entered steroidal hyperdrive to destroy net neutrality laws and, quote, dismantle existing consumer protections. Pai, a former Verizon attorney, was originally appointed by Obama and has been accused by the New York Times for running the department in secrecy and failing to make the agency's internal policy decisions public. It therefore seems certain that Washington, in full collaboration with the telecommunications industry and Wall Street, has been scheming full spectrum dominance of the global wireless connectivity for 2.5 decades. And during this time, the tacit understanding was demolish public protections. In return for America's efforts to achieve telecommunications hegemony in order to expand the police state and the nation's imperium, average citizens are handed the leftover crumbs of faster internet speeds. The real victims in the United States cyber chess match with China is the world's population. No animal, no bird, no insect, no plant, no human will be able to avoid exposure. 5G will expose us to levels of radiation that are tens to hundreds of times greater than what we face today. And this exposure will be uninterrupted throughout the day, throughout the year, and well into the future. It is now just a matter of a very short period of time, months to a year, before we will be saturated with microwave pulses. Unfortunately, the telecommunications industry and its contracted scientists remain in complete denial. A plethora of medical and environmental research has accumulated about the health and ecological risks of electromagnetic frequency radiation and microwaves. 400 new studies on electromagnetic radiation risks have been compiled by public health professor Joel Moskowitz at the University of California, Berkeley. These studies cover earlier generation technologies, whereas 5G will be far more evasive and less safe. Compared to 4G technology in use today, every 5G base station will contain hundreds of thousands of antennas, each aiming lasers like microwave beams to all devices. Now just imagine in your car. I took an electromagnetic frequency reader that I carry with me. I also, in our office in New York, I made sure that all the desks, all the computers, our broadcasting systems, all were protected, so no electromagnetic frequencies hitting anyone. And then in my home, but I was going by one of these stations, power stations, and I stopped the car, and I turned it on, and the needle went way off the chart into the high-risk area. So I drove down the block, and it didn't go down. So then I drove a mile away, and it didn't go down. Finally, I got to my destination and found out it was not the electromagnetic pulses coming off the grid. It was coming from the car. So just imagine every truck driver and every cab driver, every person who has a car, every time you're in that car, it's like being in front of a strong electromagnetic field, and that is really concerning, unless you get an old car. In a study published in the August 2018 issue of Journal of Medical Imaging and Health Informatics, after an extensive review and analysis of the medical literature, researchers concluded that, quote, incidence of cancer cases was remarkably higher among people who resided in 400 meters from mobile antennas in comparison to those who live further away. Inhabitants living close to cellular antennas are also at increased risk of developing neuropsychiatric complaints, end quote. Under the 5G regimen, every American in a suburb or city will be living not 400 meters, but 100 meters or less from an antenna. In 2016, Europa EMEMF guideline found, quote, strong evidence that long-term exposure to certain EMFs is a risk factor for diseases such as certain cancers, Alzheimer's, male infertility, common EHS, that's electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Symptoms include headaches, concentration difficulties, sleep problems, depression, lack of energy, fatigue, and flu-like symptoms, end quote. In our opinion, 5G rollout is an irresponsible experiment with potential Holocaust-like consequences in the long term. Neither the U.S. nor China have ever felt obliged to follow UNESCO's precautionary principle to avoid morally unacceptable harm when the science is plausible but still uncertain. Meaning, don't wait till the science is 100%. If there's any realistic indication the science is showing you there are problems, stop. Protect the citizen. In the case of 5G, the harm to human life is conclusive. And in the view of Dr. Leonard Hardell, H-E-R-D-E-L, an oncology professor at University Hospital of Örebro in Sweden, it may be in violation of the Nuremberg Code. Among the many research papers on the adverse effects of electromagnetic radiation, some are especially worrisome. Nearly 100% of studies employing real mobile phone exposures reveal adverse effects, which include associations to brain tumors, declines in animal populations, and symptoms of unwellness. This was published in Biomed Research International. Children are at greater risk than adults and absorb more microwave radiation than adults, Journal of Microscopy and Ultrastructure. The geometry of a child's head significantly increases mobile phone EMF absorption into the brain and eyes and cortex and hippocampus and hypothalamus. Children have especially high bone marrow conductivity, greatly increasing electromagnetic pulse absorption, published in the Journal of Physics in Medicine and Biology. And there are thousands, 10,000 studies. I just cited just a couple. They're all bad. So in conclusion, in addition, there is something largely missing from the 5G debate in the United States, whereas some European nations are paying attention to it. That is, existing safety standards for wireless technology are obsolete. This conclusion was arrived at independently by Vienna Medical University in Austria and Carl Blackman at the University of North Carolina, published in the journal Pathophysiology. The problem herein lies in the failures of federal regulatory agencies to be truthful to the scientific evidence rather than show favoritism to the wireless industry's own junk science and commercial interest. Again, private interests profit, and the public is harmed. Finally, we may consider 5G's vulnerability and dangers to society in the event of a solar storm. Listen carefully. This is not science fiction. Such a massive coronal plasma emission, or CPE, such a threat is very real. A University of Michigan professor of space sciences, Justin Casper, that's with a K-A-S-P-E-R, told members of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security just this past February, and Casper specializes in how solar activity affects society, and his fears are that a solar flare similar to the one that engulfed the Earth in a magnetic tsunami in 1859 could potentially wipe out the country's electrical power grid. And power transformers are massive utilities costing tens of millions of dollars each, and generally there are no backups. Therefore, imagine if such a solar storm were to assault a fully installed global 5G wireless network whereupon every single modern culture depends upon interconnectivity. Satellite communications will be an essential component of the 5G infrastructure, and are defenseless against massive radiation emissions from the sun. Without operative electrical and water utilities, septic systems, gas elevators, credit cards, traffic lights, airplanes, boats, cars, air conditioning, nothing is going to work. No phone, no computer, no telephone, no television. Imagine if it's winter. Imagine if it's summer. It could be for weeks or months or even years. In the event of a massive coronal plasma emission, society as we know it would come to a standstill. Nuclear power plants would likely spiral downwards into meltdown. Transportation as we know it would come to a halt in the event of a super magnetic tsunami. Chaos and destruction of much of our society would occur. Therefore, 5G poses far more problems than even its sharpest critics voice. It is not simply a threat to human health and the environment from constant exposure, but the security of the entire international community of nations is in peril, all because our congressional leaders, who I believe are a national disgrace, are failing to side with the public rather than the telecommunications industries and the Clintons and their group of constant moneymakers in Washington. Obviously, we have to do something, and we have to do it now. In fact, 5G holds the possibility of being another tipping point in the sixth extension. I'm Gary Nall. This was posted today. I suggest that you read it. I suggest you share it with everyone that you know. I do not expect anyone in the mainstream media to take it seriously because they are more often not acting as publicists and propagandists instead of doing real homework. Let's say hello to Nick Bryant in New York City. Nice to have you with us today, Nick.
It's good to be with you, Gary.
Nick is an investigative journalist and has been writing on the plight of disadvantaged children and pedophile scandals for almost 20 years. His writings have appeared in professional publications like the Journal of Professional Ethics, the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology, and the Journal of Social Distress, and the publication of School Health. He's the author of The Franklin Scandal, and it's nice to have you with us. And his website is franklinscandal.com. Nick, I'd like you to address this, a couple of questions I have, and I'll just let you run with it. The public is only focusing upon Jeffrey Epstein being reinvestigated and charged, and they couldn't be doing this unless they had new information. But at the time that Epstein was being charged, I found certain peculiarities. First of all, if you looked at the witnesses saying that he had 2 to 3 of these different sexual sessions with underage young girls every day, 7 days a week, and for at least 4 years that we know about, you're dealing with close to 1,000 children, not some 60 that they're alleging. Secondly, President Bill Clinton had visited his Lolita Island, his orgy island, on the Lolita Express 26 times that we know about, and several of those times Clinton did not allow his Secret Service detail to accompany him. That's a very unusual protocol breach. Thirdly, we now have testimony that nobody paid attention to, that Epstein had hidden cameras in all the bedrooms of the 3 different villas he had on that island, and that Prince Andrew, the famous celebrities, famous politicians from around the world, and business leaders were going there, men and women, and that he would film them without their knowledge and then ask the young girls who were servicing them to tell him all the details, that he especially wanted to know what were their fetishes and what did they do. And I happen to think, how could he have gotten away with what he did and get just a tiny slap on the wrist and our entire justice system turn its back on his doing this unless he had a deep state benefactor, someone behind him, maybe for different reasons of blackmail, who were keeping him in power so that they could use what he was able to get. It's just a thought, and I'd like your taking a look at where we stand with Jeffrey Epstein and some of the people who were around him and visited his island many times, and what is the likelihood if he is found to where he could spend the rest of his life in jail that he wouldn't be telling some of these, telling the federal government that he has information to give them if he gets some get out of jail free. Your thoughts, the form is yours.
Well, that's quite a thought, Gary. Let me start with Epstein. And Epstein was definitely providing underage girls to his rich and powerful cronies. There's a tremendous amount of evidence in that area. I had written The Franklin Scandal about was published about 8 years ago. It was about an interstate pedophile network that flew kids from coast to coast and deployed blackmail with hidden cameras, much like what we've seen with Epstein. When the Palm Beach Police Department raided Epstein's home initially a number of years ago, they found hidden cameras. So hidden cameras are an integral part of Epstein's reality. Now, the reason why Epstein has been able to do what he's done forever is he's obviously protected by some very, very powerful deep state interests, because you cannot blackmail powerful men that have access to their own thugs and murderers, and do that with impunity. Those powerful men have to know that there's somebody behind you. In the Franklin scandal, there was a Washington lobbyist named Craig Spence. Two individuals ran that pedophile network, Craig Spence and Lawrence King of Omaha, Nebraska. Now, with Spence, he was in Washington, D.C., and he had all the hidden cameras. I've generously documented that in the Franklin scandal. And he also had bodyguards. He had bodyguards that were Secret Service men. So that's what's kind of interesting about that, is that someone that's in that position who's blackmailing powerful people, there's no way that they can do that without being connected to very, very powerful people. And yes, it's true that Epstein was providing these underage girls to all kinds of people, and actually leaders of various countries, presidents of various countries. And the reason why that went on is because he was a very valuable asset. And what's kind of interesting is when he was initially busted, the Palm Beach Police Department tried to arraign him on four or five different counts of child molestation or child trafficking. And ultimately, this very fraudulent state grand jury indicted him on one count of adult pandering, which carried 5 years. But this story has not gone gentle into that good night. And I've been plugging away on it. I've pitched this story to many, many magazines, and no one wanted to go with it. And finally, the Miami Herald published a number of exposés about this. And I should say that I'm very appreciative to the Miami Herald for doing this, but the vast majority of that information was already floating out there because of the work of people like me and others who were very outraged by Epstein. Now, with Epstein getting arrested, I read that indictment, and that indictment doesn't talk about Jeffrey Epstein trafficking these girls to any of his powerful cronies. And this is a very similar situation to the pedophile network that I wrote about, because Lawrence King was arrested, and although he wasn't charged with solicitation or pandering of children, he was charged with some other things. And he did 10 years in prison, and he kept his mouth shut.
Embezzled, yes. $40 million, yes. Running a bank. Real quick. What really bothered me, and I watched last night a British documentary on the scandal with Boys Club, Boys Town, was that King was identified by all the young teenagers, girls and boys, of having not only brought together all these rich Republicans, top guy in the newspaper, banking, to a penthouse there in Omaha, but engaged in really tough, rough, terrible sex with them, mutilation, hurting them, and not once did any federal official take that information. They put him in jail for financial crimes, but not for pedophilia. And then the young girl who insisted that she was sent out, and when she was, I think, 14 years old, they threatened her, and they said, recant your, you know, statement, and she wouldn't. And do you know that they put her in jail for 15 years? This is a young girl, and the FBI would not was responsible for protecting these pedophiles. So why in the world should we believe or trust the FBI at this moment about the Jeffrey Epstein when they already have a history of protecting the pedophiles in the Omaha scandal?
What I was saying, Gary, is that indictment doesn't indict anyone else other than Jeffrey Epstein. If the FBI had done a thorough job, then all the perps that Epstein provided these young underage girls to would be indicted also. So what we're having is a cover-up. It's essentially a cover-up. The Miami Herald stories they were very prolific, and then they resonated with a lot of people, and a lot of people eventually became outraged. But the mainstream media had done its best to repress this story. And at this point, as long as only Jeffrey Epstein is going to be indicted, it shows that this is just part of a government cover-up.
Well, the question is, what is their need to keep a Jeffrey Epstein out of jail? Originally, a lot of very powerful people were involved. A lot of pressure was brought, and that was proven by the local people in Florida who wanted to see him brought up on all these crimes and the secret meeting with Trump's current, I think he's one of his cabinet members, was the government's chief prosecutor at the time, who met privately with Epstein's lawyer, something very unusual, and cut a deal not to include all these dozens and dozens, possibly hundreds of young girls, underage girls, that he was guilty of, and instead just let him get away with this slap on the wrist. And that had to have had deep state behind it. And I believe that that deep state has exposed itself since that time. And I don't trust anyone right now in Washington, D.C. to tell the truth about anything. Your final thought?
It's not going to happen. And I've gotten a lot of calls because I have some expertise in this area. And people are quite enthusiastic that Jeffrey Epstein has been arrested, and it's good that Jeffrey Epstein has been arrested. But until some senators, until some former presidents, until some former House of Representatives, until they're incarcerated, this is just a cover-up of all the nasty stuff that Jeffrey Epstein was in, including blackmail. So with Lawrence King, he kept his mouth shut, and he did 10 years, and then he had a no-show job waiting for him when he got out of prison. And I'm suspecting that Jeffrey Epstein will probably, that this will unfold that way with Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein has probably been told by the powerful people that he served that it was incumbent upon him to keep his mouth shut, or else bad things could potentially happen to him or his family. So ultimately, I think that will keep Jeffrey Epstein's mouth shut. And I don't see him talking. And his family will get to keep his money, and then he'll be taken care of to a certain degree in prison, and then he'll be taken care of.
A man named Lance, who was the third most powerful person in the Justice Department under Clinton, he was brought from Little Rock to Washington. He was found guilty of overbilling. Turns out it was Hillary Clinton's Rose Law Firm that actually was overbilled. He went to jail for a short period of time, came back out and went to work at a very big salary for the very people that he was supposed to have overbilled. What is the likelihood of that occurring? Why is the media so terrified to go back and look for the truth? Because it's been there as plain as day all along. Thank you very much for your good work, Nick Bryant, and I want people to go over there and take a look at Confessions of a D.C. Madam, co-written with Henry Vinson, and also take a look at thefranklinscandal.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.